Welcome to LifeBeat. I'm your host, Chris Gass, Right to Life of Michigan's Director of Communication and Education. Today, our special feature is going to be on arguing with people. Everyone's favorite topic. We're going to talk about talking about the pro-life issue with people. Today we're going to cover strategy, why argue with people on this topic that's only slightly controversial. We're going to talk about tactics, specifically listening politely, clear up any factual error and bring it back to the baby in that order. And then we're going to go over some common arguments and factual issues that you might encounter as examples. Today we're going to talk about this not as a crisis pregnancy situation. How you talk to someone in that situation is going to be different than how you talk to someone about abortion as if it is a political and social issue, which it is. But it is helpful to remember that many men or women that you are talking to or arguing about this topic may have an abortion in their past, and they may not offer that up or admit it. So keep that in mind as you're going. So let's jump right in. Strategy. Why argue? Why have these discussions at all? Well, every day unborn children are dying. And really, your only option at this point through our political system is to convince enough people that that's wrong to ban it. So we believe that persuasion and education matters. The truth of the matter is our culture, our media, academia is very hostile towards pro-life people. And the truth is many people have never really heard the pro-life message articulated very well. And so you have an opportunity maybe for some of these people to be the first one to ever do that. And when do these opportunities present themselves? It's always interesting how they happen. It can be a friend, a family member talking about a current issue, something that happened, some political event. That's an opportunity. It'll present itself sometimes in strange times and places, but it's up to you to take advantage of that, and we believe that when you do that, that it has an impact. Now, what's a realistic goal for this? Honestly, you're not going to convert someone on the spot, most likely. So I would say it's not a realistic goal to do that. When I first started working for the pro-life movement, I used to tell myself that if I could just sit the entire country down, and talk to them for 30 minutes, that everything would be solved and abortion would disappear and everyone would get it. Well, that's just fantasy because that's not how people operate. People aren't automatons. They have their own beliefs and agendas. You can't just plug in the right argument and then their mind will flip. That's not how human beings work. And that's the real key of this entire issue is human beings, not things. So I think a realistic goal, though, is you're planting a seed. Now, maybe it's a Jack and the Beanstalk kind of seed, and it's going to sprout up, and you can convert a person on the spot. That happens sometimes. Most often, it's going to take a while. And, maybe you're planting that seed in rocky ground. It's never going to grow. Maybe you're planting it in, a tough location where a rainstorm is going to come on down the road, maybe years later, and that seed's going to sprout. You never know. So really, your goal is to present your argument well, be a voice for the unborn, and then hopefully that person's open to your persuasion or something is going to change in that person's life or thinking, or they're going to keep hearing this and they're going to change their mind down the road. And we know it works. We can see former abortionists and abortion clinic workers who are not only not working there anymore, they're pro-life advocates. And so talking to people's consciences can work. It's not always an instantaneous thing. We especially want to talk to people who are uncomfortable with abortion, but also uncomfortable with abortion bans, kind of the mushy middle, and there is a lot of it. There's not a lot of clear and logical thinking about this issue. Most of it is based on emotion and experiences, and a lot of people don't hear a very persuasive message on the topic. And a lot of those people, if we could just get them to a comfortable place With legislation on abortion, we could end abortion in America. So we don't necessarily have to. We don't want to write off the 20% of America that just believes abortion should be legal for any reason whatsoever. I don't care. You don't want to write them off. But really, our goal is to reach that, you know, 40, even 50% of the country that's in the middle that's really conflicted on it. So let's talk about tactics. Well, I think it's important really to point out that, you know, why do we believe what we believe? I mean, it's really simple. Unborn children are innocent human beings. That's why we're pro-life. And sort of our basic logical argument is unborn children are innocent human beings. It's wrong to kill innocent human beings. Therefore, it's wrong to kill unborn children. Pretty simple. Now, of course, many complicated questions or issues can arise from this. Because this isn't an academic issue, this is a real life issue involving parenthood and society and all economics and all sorts of issues. However, you know, that's why we're all pro-life. However, I will tell you, there are many hardcore abortion supporters who really do believe that we're out to control women. This is all some sort of clever ploy, a religious plot or a Republican plot to force women back into domestic servants. Now, I would say often many of these people have had a really bad personal experience, perhaps with an abusive boyfriend or spouse. And so when they are talking to you on the topic, especially if you're a man, they're projecting their personal experience on you. And they may not think that you're being genuine. They think that you're just kind of all making it up. Now, I'm going to give my personal opinion here, but I really think it's more that the other side is kind of making it up and in this sort of way. So I think most abortion supporters, I think the vast majority, don't arrive at their support for abortion through reasoning or arguments. They don't get to the point where they are because they encounter a really clever argument for bodily autonomy. I think really what they're doing is using these arguments as rationalizing their support for abortion that was pre-existing. Just as pro-lifers come to it and say, unborn children are human beings, don't kill them, really I think a lot of abortion supporters come at it from the angle, whether it's through personal experience or someone telling them or pressure from the culture that, as President Obama put it, women shouldn't, or men, shouldn't be punished with a baby. They just discount the human value of the unborn child. Now, that sounds really callous to just say, I don't care, or we don't want to punish people with babies. It's not a very persuasive argument in our society where everything revolves around trying to be nice and polite. So what they try to do instead is they will rely on dehumanizing the child in some way. They'll set up mothers and children as irreconcilable adversaries. They're going to hit on some argument that gives them a plausible justification for saying people shouldn't be punished with babies. And this isn't every person, obviously, but I think this is most people who support abortion who are very vocal about it. Let's just use bodily autonomy as an example. You know, how many of you people do you think formed an opinion on abortion after hearing the bodily autonomy argument that women should have absolute control over their bodies? And I think if you press a lot of those people, they don't really believe it. They might believe that, for example, taking a common issue of the day, that people should be forced to take vaccines, just mandatory as a needed measure for protecting public health, or that parents, mothers and fathers, absolutely should be forced to take care of their born children and should face legal penalties if they fail to do that. They really don't believe in an absolute right to bodily autonomy. It's just an argument that works in their favor when it comes to justifying abortion. Artificial wombs are another example. So, you know, there's this potential of someday developing an artificial womb that could carry a child from fertilization all the way to birth. And you might think that, oh, well, that completely eliminates, you know, the burden of pregnancy on the woman, and therefore abortion would go away because we can simply just transfer the child to, in a procedure that's no more invasive than an abortion, just transfer him to the artificial womb, and that's it. Well, abortion supporters already have an argument handy. They claim that the right to an abortion has always implied that people have a right not to have any descendants genetically related to them. It sounds kind of silly. No one really thinks that as a right, but they've already invented a justification for why artificial wombs shouldn't affect abortion at all. And that's because deep down, the woman shouldn't have to be punished with a baby. They shouldn't have to emotionally deal with a child out there that essentially they adopt through this artificial womb. It's not really about bodily autonomy or the burdens of pregnancy, which are real. It's about they don't want the baby. So they need a justification that's connected to some good, or at least the lesser of two evils. And they just don't think a baby's life is worth it. Now, some people reach that conclusion because they believe a baby's life isn't worth living. And I will say that I've seen, you know, a lot of social workers or people that interact with very poor, mentally ill people, and they look at how those people live and operate, and for them it's just unthinkable that they could be in a similar situation. And they really truly think that such a life is not worth living. So that's a very difficult issue to address, because you're trying to not only make a good argument, but you're having to deal with their emotional baggage of seeing people in the worst possible situations. Others might say, truly believe that abortion is needed as just a common good for controlling population. They think it's, if we have too many kids, it's an existential threat and it's going to eliminate all humanity. And it's just a necessary evil. There's some people that will argue that if you talk about abortion enough. There's some people who are truly ignorant about fetal development and just don't know. And so it's very easy for them to dehumanize the unborn child. Now, I will say that we need to remember that most women who have abortions have already given birth. And so I know we're not talking about crisis pregnancies here, but I don't think people are as ignorant about it as they would let on. And for them, it's just kind of like a mantra. Oh, there's no brain. There's no feelings. It doesn't matter. It's a blob of tissue. It's just more of an excuse than what they truly think. But there is plenty of ignorance about that, and it's always good to correct it when you encounter it. You know, the bottom line, as I said again, they don't see the child as having value worth respecting. So it's important when we argue, we don't want to focus on the red herring and the pro-abortion talking points. I think it's worth addressing it. You don't want to just ignore what they're saying, but we always want to bring it back to the baby, because that's our strongest point. And that's honestly why we're pro-life, and that's honestly the disconnect with the person, is they don't see that person as valuable. I think personally, mostly because we can't see the unborn child. You know, if every woman who was pregnant had a window to the womb, I don't think we'd have ever legalized abortion. It's because we can't see the child who would be suffering that we can pretend that the suffering doesn't exist. You know, also why, you know, pictures and videos of people suffering gets a lot more attention than just a story or an article about it. Now, before we can bring it back to the baby, I think we have to do two steps. And I think the first step is we have to listen politely. Most people will shut you out. They might listen to you, but they just will mentally shut you out if they think that you are angry, or they can easily stereotype or pigeonhole you. You know, you're just a crazy religious fanatic. I don't have to care what you say at all, even if we're going to keep arguing together for 15 minutes. Sometimes when you listen politely, you can catch them off guard. It makes them feel good that they're being listened to and respected. And sometimes that can create an opportunity for a conversation to continue and get into more issues in detail. So listen politely. I know it's tempting to get emotional or nervous. You just have to put your emotions aside. Listen and then respond. That's step one. Step two, you have to refute any factual errors. I don't think you go right to bring it back to the baby. I think if they bring up a point, you have to address it at some level. If you utterly dismiss them, they're going to a lot of times interpret it as you are dismissing them personally. And sometimes their points have a valid angle. Sometimes they're just horribly factually wrong. If they were true, they would have some valid angle, but they're not. So I think you want to address these issues, especially if they've made a mistake or are operating in bad information. And when you can do that, you can transition into SLED. So SLED is our way of bringing it back to the baby. Basically, what is the difference between a baby in the womb and a baby a week after birth? Now, most people, sadly not all, but most people would recognize that we can't just kill a baby a week after birth, or even a minute after birth. But they believe that a week before birth, or you know, a minute before birth, you can kill the baby. What's the relevant difference between the two? For us, we know morally there really is none. It's the baby is the baby. The difference between a born baby and a baby in the womb is size. The born baby is bigger. That doesn't really justify taking someone's life. Level of development. Obviously, a born baby is more developed than a baby at, say, 10 weeks. But we don't believe that human value ties, most of us don't, not all of us, but most of us don't believe that human value ties to your level of development. Just because you're smarter or better athlete doesn't mean that you have objective moral value that's higher than others. Environment. Where you are doesn't really change what you are, who you are, or your value. I have the same human value whether I'm here, whether I'm there, whether I'm inside something, whether I'm outside something. And then also degree of dependency. Just because I am dependent on someone doesn't mean I have less human value. Actually, the way human beings work, we're all dependent on society. If electricity got shut off tomorrow, a lot of us would die because we just can't cope with it. We don't have those skills, and we've built up this interdependent society. That doesn't mean that you can just go around and start mass murdering people if such an event happens. Your degree of dependency doesn't affect your value. And so SLED, again, size, level of development, environment, degree of dependency, this is what helps us bridge the gap between their perceived respect for every human life, because most people you're going to be talking with want to believe that they believe every human being has value and is important. So you're bridging the gap between their perceived respect they have for every human life, and you're trying to get them to extend these existing feelings, and they're often feelings, not logical, coherent arguments, but feelings. You want to extend them to the unborn child. And like I said, it's not reasonable to expect they're instantly going to flip a switch and do that in every case. Sometimes they will, most times they won't, and you are just kind of chipping away at them. So SLED, use it, but that's after you've listened to them and after if you have an opportunity to kind of refute any factual errors or correct any wrong thinking, then you give them that argument, because basically, you know, our argument is the unborn child are human beings, don't kill the human being. They really have to disagree with that logically. Either they think the unborn child isn't an innocent human being, or they believe you can kill innocent human beings if you want. And usually it's the first one that they're having problems with, and SLED is what's addressing it directly. So let's take some common examples and kind of just give you a breakdown of how that would work. So let's start with a real typical one, rape and incest. You know, you don't believe abortion should be legal and rape and incest, that's terrible. And so first you're refuting, is there anything worth refuting? I think it is worth saying that, abortion is legal for any reason, and most of those reasons do not include rape and incest. 1% or fewer of abortions involve that. So that's not really a justification for all abortions. And also, if you have a personal example, that's very powerful. So I would say, and this is my way of bringing it back to the baby, I would say that, you know, I used to, when I first joined the pro-life movement, have that rape and incest exception. What changed my mind was meeting a person who's conceived in rape and hearing their story. And they challenged me, they said, do I not have the same human value that you do? Don't I have the same human value? And I, staring at this person face to face, the person was giving a speech, had to undeniably say, yes, you have human value. And so that was my way of bringing it back to the baby. So if this born person has equal human value to me, then why should a child conceived in rape in the womb have any different human value? And why should they not have the same legal protection that I do? And so that's my way of bringing it back to the baby. You can use other ways to do that. Another interesting factual error they make with that is they assume that most women who get pregnant through rape have abortions, and that's not true. The best study we have is 50% choose abortion, 50% don't. And of the ones that don't, if they don't have a miscarriage, most of them will keep the baby instead of offering up for adoption. In their mind, they emotionally can't picture a woman taking care of a child who is conceived as rape. But that does happen. So you can refute that factual error, that they're kind of that assumption they're making. But then again, you got to bring it back to the baby. Why is the baby in the womb who's been conceived in rape different than a child of different parentage? Here's another one that we heard a lot in the election. Democrats and social spending reduce abortions more. Therefore, you should focus on that and vote for those folks instead of banning abortion. And so what they're saying there is we are uncomfortable with abortion, and maybe abortion should be reduced. And really, it's these things that reduce abortions, so we should focus on that. But we still need to keep abortions legal for really difficult questions, difficult issues. And so I think, you know, a factual error you can refute there is you can point out that there's a lot of countries in the world that have extensive social safety nets and spend on people like you wouldn't believe. Some of those countries have higher abortion rates than the United States. So if that were the only issue to reducing abortions, another example is, if we just gave everyone contraception or did the sex ed, they would understand it. A majority of women who have abortions are using contraceptives in the month that they got pregnant. And so you can correct those kind of factual errors, but you need to bring it back to SLED. You know, okay, well, why do you believe that we should reduce abortions? Is it because these unborn children have human value? Well, you don't believe that we should kill, a one-year-old. So why do you believe that, and you're already uncomfortable with abortion, what makes you uncomfortable? Kind of plumb those depths, and then that's where you bring in SLED to bring it back to the baby. Here's a common one. Abortions are only legal in the first few months of pregnancy, so they're not a big deal. The child isn't very developed. A corollary of that would be late-term abortions are really rare, and it doesn't matter. And so the factual errors that you can correct there are, no, actually abortion is legal through all 9 months of pregnancy in the United States. That may shock them because they may really, really latch onto this development idea and believe that, you know, a child at 6 months of pregnancy is a human being and shouldn't be killed. And the issue with late-term abortions, there are thousands of late-term abortions in the United States. It's not true that they're rare. I wouldn't call thousands of deaths, a rarity. And so in these cases, you kind of correct, again, refute their kind of factual errors. What are they really saying? They're really focusing on the development thing. So when you bring it back to the baby, you can go with that level development of point really hard. Okay, why is a baby at 6 months in the womb have human value, but a baby at 5 weeks doesn't? You know, at what point does this development kick in that they suddenly become a human being? You know, get them really thinking about that. And do we believe then that a child, you know, a five-year-old has more human value than a five-week-old child if it's after birth, if it's just simply a matter of their development? And is our humanity only valuable because of our intelligence or whatnot? You know, why do you get to define those categories, and why can't I use a different definition that discounts other groups of human beings as valuable? Here's another one. Disabled babies have lives not worth living. This is a difficult one. Sometimes they might have a personal experience, or they might know someone who is a caregiver for someone who's disabled or has dementia, and they think that's just intolerable. And they can't, maybe they're perfectly abled. Well, no one's really perfectly abled, but you know, they just can't imagine themselves in that situation living life. And so, you've listened, what they're kind of motivating is they can't empathize with a person with disability, or they can and think it's just not worth living, and they would, I don't know, commit suicide in such a situation. And so, obviously, there's not a factual error there so much, unless you want to say that, you know, if you take a poll of people who have disabilities or who are suffering generally, they think that their lives have value, especially if they're being well cared for. And so really what you're trying to get there when you bring it back to the baby is focusing on degree of dependency or level of development, and really trying to get them to understand that if you think that because you're disabled you have less value, certainly doesn't that apply to plenty of born human beings? Why should a disabled baby not have human value, but a disabled child have the exact same human value as an able child? Here's another common one. Banning abortion would kill lots of women. And so this is kind of a necessary evil argument that women are just going to have abortions anyway. We have to keep it legal. If we ban abortion, then, you know, a lot of women are going to die, and that's bad. So the factual error there is, you know, that's not true. If you look at statistics that were used when they legalized abortion, they made it up. This is a good point to point out that it's really helpful to learn more about these factual things. You know, you don't need to know any real facts to use the SLED argument. So the SLED will help you out in almost every situation. But it is good to learn more, and you can refute these factual errors. And sometimes that's an opening to get them to think, oh, I am operating on bad information. Then you hit them with SLED, and here is a good, solid, logical argument to get them thinking. So again, banning abortion did not kill millions of women before Roe versus Wade. Did not in Michigan in 1972 when abortion was legal. And so that's important. But then it's important to ask them, well, why do women have value? Why do women have human value? Why don't you want them to die? Is really killing those children the only option that society has to pursue? Why can't we respect both the woman and the child? One more real quick. The globe is overpopulated and we need abortion to thin the herd. So a lot of people actually believe that. It's kind of sad. You can, you know, try to refute any factual errors about overpopulation. You can point out that really we're in a demographic crunch, and it's going to be bad. But really you're just trying to bring it back to the baby. You know, why can't we eliminate you if you have human value, but we can eliminate the unborn child? What's the difference? Why don't we just forcibly sterilize people instead? Not that you'd want to support that, but instead of actually, you know, killing children in the womb. Why is that the first thing you jump to? And then the last thing I just want to mention, there are some people out there who will simply say, I don't care about the baby. Kill them anyway. They're human. It doesn't matter. But they shouldn't be punished with a baby. You might not get very far with that person. You might be at an impasse, because most of these SLED really depends on people believing that innocent human beings have value. And if they don't believe that, then SLED isn't going to get you very far. But still, I think it's important you lay out a case for them. You tell them what you believe. You never know. Sometimes whatever thing that's going on in their head that's causing them to have such a callous belief will resolve, and somewhere down the road they may come to agree with you. So never give up on a person. All right, that's all the time we have for this edition of Life Beat. Join us again next week. Have a wonderful weekend.